Overheard at Yoga is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. So today I have, is it Alan? India Alan? I just instantly forgot your name. As soon as Travis hits record, I'm like, who am I talking to?
Where am I?
What's going on? The heat at the hot yoga studio must be getting to me. I'm really excited to have you on my podcast today. And I want to say the first time I met you, I didn't meet you in person. I met you through the internet. Mm-hmm. It was like a Facebook invite or something. And I was like, I don't know if I know her. Do I know her? And basically, you had said, I'm just reaching out to really cool women in the health and wellness industry, and I just want to get to know more people like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really rad. So that was my first impression of you. And then another time I saw you at a grocery store and I like chased you down. I was like, hi, how are you?
Yep, you were in Albertsons. You were like, wait a minute, I know you. Uh-huh. I don't know you, but I know you.
I don't know you, but officially I feel meet you. Like I know you. So I was excited to meet you.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah. It was really fun. Yep. And then you teach at Hollywood Market. And I moved close to the area and started frequenting Hollywood Market. And so, yeah, it's been an amazing year this last year of like our paths have just gotten closer and closer.
And I'm so glad. Yes. Can you tell me more about your journey to yoga?
Yes. So I grew up as a dancer. I was a like ballet, tap, jazz dancer. I loved it. And I grew up in Mexico. So when I was 9 years old, my dad's a geologist, and we moved to Mexico. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll try like soccer for a couple years. And then I was like, nah, I'm not a soccer player. I'm a dancer. And mm-hmm. so I went back to dance and I ended up like teaching dance classes. So that was my first job. And I learned all of the things that I was teaching in Spanish. So I was teaching like ballet and jazz, which have a lot of French named like moves in them mm-hmm. in Spanish. And when I moved back to the United States, I was just like, I feel like that's a lot to like dig through. So I kind of dove more from dance into yoga, and I just started doing like YouTube videos. I started doing Tara Styles.
Yes.
Strala Yoga, like YouTube in high school. And she taught me like how to do a headstand. And like, I just was excited to be able to put my body into shapes. And like, okay. That was kind of my first allure to it. And then actually got into hot yoga. I think it was like 7 years ago now. I started going during kind of like a difficult phase in life. And I was like, I just want to go try every yoga studio in Boise. Like, I just want to go figure out what all these different types of yoga are and like what I like. And so I had a hot yoga studio. It's now Yoga 6. At the time, mm-hmm. it was called Essential. Mm-hmm. And I went there like first just a couple times a week, and then it was like 6 times a week, and then it was like something that I loved so much. It brought me to my body. It brought me to like realize how negative my inner talk was with myself.
That was the first thing that blew me away about yoga, but specifically hot yoga. I think all your senses are being affected and you can't think. You have to listen to someone else speak, mm-hmm. and their voice is so nice, and they're saying nice things to you, and you suddenly realize, like, wow, I don't have to talk trash about myself. I can actually encourage myself.
I remember one of the teachers was always, at the beginning of each class, she would remind you, you know, sometimes the harder thing is to rest. And sometimes the harder thing is to admit that maybe today isn't the day that you just, like, rush past your limitations. Like, mm-hmm. maybe today you, like, just meet yourself where you're at. Like, sometimes that's the harder, more valuable thing to do. So, like, catch yourself if you want to rest. Like, try it out. See what happens if you rest today.
So were you one of those people who would just, like, go balls to the wall and, like, hurt yourself and get mad at yourself?
Yeah, not, like, hurt myself necessarily, but I would be, like, oh my God, that's so stupid. Why can't I do this? Or, you know, like, I would get like really, I'm a like recovering perfectionist and wanted to be, you know, perfect. And like, there was always some sort of like thing that I was trying to achieve and like attain. And yoga really brought me to this place of like, oh, how do I just be? How do I just like sit with myself? And in hot yoga, you're also sitting with discomfort. You're sitting with like an overwhelming amount of, like you said, like your senses are, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And so you are present in the moment and it's not always fun. Like there's times where you're like, why am I doing this? I don't want to be here right now. And then you like to be able to meet yourself with compassion in that moment and be able to breathe through it. That is, I think, the magic where like off the mat, you encounter something difficult or uncomfortable and you have practice on how to breathe through something hard or difficult and stay more present.
Yes.
And like that's where yoga really blossoms into like the other parts that are off of the mat. They're not just about the physical postures anymore. It's really about like how you meet yourself, how you meet your life.
Do you teach yoga?
I do.
How did you get into teaching yoga?
I kind of knew from like the moment that I started going to yoga classes that I wanted to be a yoga teacher. Like it was always in the back of my head. And I was going to college. I was going to Boise State studying writing. And I was working full-time and going to school full-time, and I was basically at one point just waiting to be done with college so that I could go do yoga all the time.
Really?
I was like, I just want to do yoga. Like, I just, that's, it was something that helped me a lot during that, like, getting through working full-time and going to school full-time. And so I ended up taking, like, a year off after college, and then I went to my yoga teacher training. I went to Shanti Yoga Teacher Training.
Awesome.
In 2017. And got my 200-hour certification and immediately, like, jumped into teaching. And at first taught too much, like, definitely got very...
burnout.
A little overzealous, which is what you kind of hear, like, all the time. Teachers are like, don't take on too much. Don't do it.
It's so funny.
It's so easy. It's so easy to do.
Because you're so excited. Yep. And then you're like, uh-oh. When do I get to do yoga? Because now I'm teaching all the classes. When do I get to do the classes?
Exactly. It definitely mm-hmm. changes. So then learning kind of the balance between, you know, how much I want to teach and how to keep that practice magical and spacious for myself as well and continue to learn and, like, grow as a teacher. Learning new things is one of my favorite things. And as a yoga teacher, there's always new things to learn. There's always workshops and other people's classes that you can take.
Yes.
And, like, there's inspiration to be found everywhere. I really feel like there's just a plethora of opportunity for you to enrich your practice, but you have to have time to do it. And if you don't have time to do it, that's when you're in trouble as a teacher because you're just going to be like going through the motions.
Yeah, I don't like that feeling.
No.
It happens to me sometimes, especially teaching the same sequence all the time, mm-hmm. which hot yoga gets a bad rep for this. But and I can see why. And there's always, I mean, we've already talked about the benefits like of doing the same thing again and again. You can really see how your body and mind changes when you're going through the same motions. But as a teacher of those same motions, sometimes I disassociate. I suddenly am like, where am I? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. Which I think happened at the very beginning of this episode. Oh my gosh. What was the hardest part for you as a new teacher coming like fresh out of yoga training?
I feel like I became a yoga teacher. Like started teaching my first classes in January of 2018, and I ended up having some medical stuff happen at the same time. So like my life got really hard right in line with when I started teaching yoga.
Interesting.
And I think it was like a real blessing because going to a yoga class, teaching a yoga class, you're going to have to be vulnerable. You're going to have to be authentic. And so to be in a space where you're kind of struggling personally, I would tend to avoid my mat in times like that.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And so being a teacher kind of forced me to show up and forced me also to learn how to be more authentic with like where it is that I'm at. So being able to be more raw, even with people that I'm just meeting, like as a yoga teacher, if I'm like I had a death in the family in March, so I started teaching in January and then I had a death in March. Oof. And I was like, how do I teach a class and like deal with this level of emotion?
Oh my gosh. And students bring emotion to you too. And you're mm-hmm. like, I'm going through shit too. I don't know what
like,
to say.
And you're holding space. So like, how do you hold that container for other people when you yourself are kind of struggling? Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing because the things that you are preaching are the things that are going to heal you if you practice them. So if you are really paying attention and if you're really like, I want to walk the walk, I don't want to just talk the talk, then like that practice as a yoga teacher is going to be healing in whatever hardship that you face. It's going to be supportive. Even though you're in a teacher seat, I still think it's like keeping you even that much more accountable.
Do you feel like you weren't naturally that way? Do you think just teaching helped lean you in that direction? Or was that a difficult transition for you to do? Because based off of how I met you and started following you on social media, I always loved your authenticity. You're so honest and you're saying like, this is what's going on in my life and I'm still making time to prioritize my health, my mental health, my physical health. And I thought you were so good about creating your own little community. And I tend to follow people on the internet, people who are local in my community who also care about community and creating a safe, mentally healthful type of experience online. Because when I get on social media, I'm like, I don't know this total stranger. And then they're making me feel bad about myself and I can't deal with it. And so I admire that about you. And do you feel like that was always that way?
I feel like there were like seedlings, but it's taken me a lot of time to cultivate the confidence to like be more open and be more confident in the like my authenticity. I struggled with really negative inner talk and like, yeah, self-talk. Like growing up, I was overweight. I had a lot of problems with like image and body image and the way that I related to myself. And so finding that there is like a loving and supportive way to care for yourself and walk through life and feel really good in your own skin, it just is like, how can I not like shout that from the rooftops and just be like, you can feel better. Like,
you guys.
Like just lean in, like lean into these things. Like not the thing, there are a multiplicity of ways to feel good, like, and different things work for different people. And so I think that I feel very called to facilitate healing. Like everything that I do is, and that I'm passionate about at its core, is about facilitating healing and growth and transformation in other people. Even my yoga classes, I want it to be an experience. I want people to feel and like experience something. I don't want to just have it be like, oh, this thing that they go do and they disassociate for an hour, you know, like, which is easy to do.
Totally easy.
And it's okay to do sometimes, but also, like, I want to help bring people back home into themselves. And that is one thing that, like, the practice of yoga and surrounding myself with women and other people, not even just women, but other people that I really admire and that are, like, doing the things that I want to do have only supported me feeling even better and being able to share that with even more people.
I want to talk more about that disassociation piece, because I think for me, when I started doing hot yoga and having it be like I was doing Bikram all the time in the beginning, and that's when I was in my early 20s dealing with who am I? Like, because I just kept kind of leaning into whatever everyone else is doing, being like, do I like this? Do I like this? You're figuring out yourself. And then learning how to talk to yourself. And so having that consistency for me, I grew up very inconsistent. My parents were inconsistent. We moved around a lot. Like we grew up religious, but then we weren't religious, but then we were. I didn't know what to think of anything. So having that consistency of like every day at this time, I'm going to go do this class and the class is exactly the same. I would be kind of in and out of this disassociated framework. And I wouldn't even say it was a disassociation. I'd say it was like I'm in the zone, I'm in the flow. And it was a distraction from the bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then I'd come back to, and I could kind of compare like this peaceful place I had been where I lost time to, okay, what am I thinking? What is my teacher saying? And can I compare notes? And I always liked what my teacher said better. And one of my first sensations of like changing the thought pattern, noticing the change in thought patterns, is I caught myself in the mirror once at yoga. And I was like, that girl's really pretty. And I'm like, oh shit, that girl's me. I was like, oh, I can think that way about myself. God, I'm so glad I'm not Absolutely. In my 20s anymore.
I remember when I first started teaching, I looked at the mirror and everybody was in like Shavasana. The class was in Shavasana. And I like saw my reflection and I was like, wow, I like look like who I want to be. You know, like, like that's like, if my 15-year-old self could see who I turned into, she would be in awe. Like, she would just be in such awe, which is a cool feeling to get to that place within yourself of, like, acceptance and love and, like, expression, you mm-hmm. know? Like, being able to see that reflected back at you is I think, the most natural thing, but also the hardest thing. Like, it goes against everything that we're kind of taught. We're usually so stuck in. And comparison and in focusing on the negative yeah. and like what we can do better and where like, we're lacking instead of all of the like amazing things about us.
It's a tricky industry because people want to strive to be better. Why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. But then you have to be like, am I condemning myself for not being quote unquote better and finding that line of accepting where you are. And then it's like, but I also care about improving, like self-improvement, mm-hmm. like improving how I communicate with others, how I take care of myself. And so if I catch myself in a negative thought pattern, if I catch myself judging or comparing myself to others, I'll like if I'm looking in the mirror and brushing my teeth, I'm like, damn, you need to use some moisturizer. You need to get your hair did. You look rough. And then I'll roll my eyes and be like, I don't have time for this. I gotta go. Yeah. Like, we don't have time to do this right now. Like, let's do this later and then we'll get into it and then we'll move forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, self-talk matters so much. It matters so much. And it's a practice. And I think that's why it's something that goes so like hand in hand with yoga, and it can be so unexpected. I don't think, a lot of people start yoga because they're like, I want to feel better, or like, mm-hmm. I can do better. Like, it just is supposed to make me feel better, or it'll like improve my flexibility. Like, that's yeah. kind of, you know, just very generic ways that people will start yoga. They'll go into it thinking that it's going to aid their physical body,
right?
And thinking about it as a very physical practice. And then, like, suddenly these little things begin to open up mentally, emotionally, like yes. the heart space. And it becomes richer and richer, and people feel better in ways that they totally didn't expect. And I think that's what is, the like, really powerful about it. And it's a practice that can meet you at whatever age, whatever place you're in. Like, it doesn't have to be a really demanding physical practice. It can be yin. It can be a yoga nidra. It can be,
which yin is like, a mentally demanding practice, it is. In my opinion.
It is.
I used to always be like, oh, it's the easy class, come to that one. And the yin teacher would come out, Don Silva, you got to take his yin class. He would come out and be like, excuse me, it is not easy. You try holding that lizard pose for 5 minutes and see where your head is at, see mm-hmm. where your body's at. It surprised me because I was like, oh, it's easy. It's not vinyasa.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of like preconceptions about different modalities and different practices. And I think that if you took the opportunity to dabble, if everyone just like dabbled a little bit in all of them, they would find like a practice for every age, for every season, for there's like literally something for everybody to mm-hmm. support you where you're at. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that you find a practice that meets you where you're at, not so much about like the Instagram post, you know.
Yeah.
It's not so much about just putting your body into shapes like mm-hmm. I originally was really into. It's about so much more than that. But I think that it's alluring, those shapes, like the physical practice is alluring, but it's so much deeper.
I'm curious what you think of this. So my dear sweet mom, she, like, I've been into this yoga thing for a really long time, and my mom, I think 5 years of me after I've been teaching, she finally was like, I'm going to try this yoga class. And she didn't tell me. She did it behind my back. She goes to a hot studio in her hometown. She lives in St. George, Utah. And it was one of their foundational sequenced classes, really similar to Bikram. And she went a couple times, and she didn't tell me until I came for a visit a few months later. And she said basically her plan was to surprise me, because she was like, I'm going to go a bunch and get really good, and then my daughter's going to come to town, and I'm going to go to yoga with her, and I'm going to show off and show her how good I am at yoga. And basically she said the hot yoga was crazy, but she discovered yin yoga and how it really helped her back. And then, but then she said she wasn't really ready to get into yoga because she was intimidated by what everyone says of yoga, of this mental health and how it opens up your heart and it changes your life. And she's like, I'm scared of it changing my life, mm-hmm. which some sort of mental block there. So what do you think of that? I didn't know what to say to that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I can see that though. I mean, it's a very powerful, very like, deep practice. It has very deep roots, and I think that a lot of people are like, I don't even know, like, it's overwhelming, I don't even know where to start. And if there is something unsettled within them,
there it is,
it's gonna be a reflection of like, ooh, if I do this, is it gonna open up that, like, is it gonna get me closer to this like feeling of like restlessness or, you know, like, it doesn't have to be like as extreme as like full on depression and anxiety. It can be something a lot lighter than that. But I still think that it kind of reflects the opportunity.
I bet maybe. That's what it was. Cause my mom has a tendency to keep the conversation light. Cause she's been in survival mode at different points in her life, and she's like, oh, let's just keep everything light. So I could imagine her being like, something's happening emotionally and I need to get out of here.
And I mean, like I said, I like to give experiences, and I will usually read something at the end of class, and it'll be like a meditation, either one that I wrote or one that I have found that I really love. And it is like very heart opening. And I never feel more accomplished than when like somebody cries or someone falls asleep. I'm like, yes, like I did a great job.
You created the space.
Right? Like I want it to be a space where somebody feels safe falling apart a little bit. I think that's important for me. So somebody who is struggling, if they have some sorrow, if that needs to come up, I want to help support them meeting that sorrow in a safe container that feels like attainable and doable, and that they can then kind of like leave after class. You know, like, it doesn't have to be that they sit with it all the time, but if they can come to my class and they can sit with it for 20 minutes, if they just touch in, you know, like, it becomes really healing, and it becomes really like a really safe space to facilitate healing. But I think that if you are not ready for that, it can be really scary if you get
surprising,
close, you know,
scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you say makes a yoga class bad? Like, what would be a bad yoga class?
I really dislike it when teachers don't take into account the breath. They're like, stay here for 3 breaths. Okay, now moving on. I'm like, that was not enough time.
What if they say three breaths, but they have you there for 20 breaths? You're like, what the hell?
Yeah, like I get a little like, okay, you said 3 breaths. Come on. And I think really having somebody teach a class that's not present, like not connected, that isn't.
Can you tell?
I feel like I can tell.
I think I can too.
I am pretty, I feel like mostly online classes that I've done, a lot of them from like different fitness programs mainly, that are there are people coming from a very fitness background and they're teaching a yoga class, but they're not necessarily yoga teachers. Like, it's like I get so judgmental. I'm like, that's the wrong cue, you shouldn't say it like that, like, why are you doing it that way? Like, I get very judgmental about their teaching. But I also recognize like they're coming from a totally different perspective, and I've never had a class like that in person. Like, all of my in-person classes have been with people who have made it pretty magical.
Well, I think when fitness people who haven't done a yoga training teach yoga, I don't think that I think that's where the misstep is, because they have like this full extensive fitness background, but the yoga component is very small, and it's and we know how deep yoga can like 200 hours is nothing. That's the very beginning of your yoga journey. Yes. That is not your fully it.
That's your foundation.
Right. And so if you haven't taken that and you're teaching yoga, it's going to feel not quite right.
Yeah. It's just kind of like dry. Like it just is very much about the physical postures, and it's not so much about the breath or the experience. Like I feel like when you're with a teacher who's really plugged in and like with you and breathing with you and like leading the breath, and like they kind of guide you on this whole experience. And if you're not plugged in and not connected, then it's that piece is what is missing. And I think that's the difference for me between like what makes a great yoga class or what would be like subpar.
Yes. Okay, well, so what do you do besides teach yoga?
I do all sorts of things. So I'm currently going to massage therapy school.
Amazing.
So I'm a yoga teacher, massage therapist in training, which is pretty exciting. I love it.
They go so well together.
They really do. I'm really loving the massage therapy training and the foundation that I already had of the body, like as a yoga teacher, is really helpful, and it's helping me just understand more about why we do what we do in yoga, while, you know, giving me like a whole new skill set as well.
We had this amazing massage therapist who used to teach yoga and do massage at our studio, and after a massage appointment she'd come downstairs with her client to check him out, and before she check him out she would show him a few yoga him or her whoever she would show them a few yoga poses that they could do to help them with their issue, and then maybe that would affect the frequency of massages that they're getting. Mm-hmm. But she's like, come to yoga, do a massage, you can do these at home. And I loved the holistic aspect that she would add to her massage therapy. I thought it was so cool. It goes so well together.
It really does. It's such an amazing practice. So that's really, really exciting. And I'm really passionate about women's health, and I work for and with, I would say with, language is very important. I work with Samantha Zipporah, who is a women's health educator, activist, author, and I have kind of help all of her back end stuff, like her book orders and emails, and she's coming out with a learning library that has a really intense, amazing amount of resources available for members, and there's different tiers that you'll be able to join, and it's basically access to information on all these different levels, so you should definitely check that out if you're interested in learning more.
What inspired you to be interested in women's health?
I had a really intense medical journey with women's health. I had a Bartholin gland cyst. Bartholin gland, there's two Bartholin glands, one on either opening of the vagina, on either side of the vagina.
And wow.
They help with arousal, lubricating the vagina during arousal. And sometimes they get that duct, which is like tiny, it's microscopic, it will get clogged and it'll create a cyst. And I had a very extra special experience where I had chronic cysts and then ended up needing to get the gland removed.
Oh my gosh.
And I have had 4 labial surgeries. And while I was going through this process, it was like 3 years, the last 3 years. Samantha Zipporah was like my mentor and really helped in me understanding that my body was talking to me. Mm-hmm. Like there was something that she was saying, and learning how to be even in more in a better like conversation and communication with myself. And she wasn't like afraid of it. Everybody, all of the doctors I went to, everyone's like, I have no idea. I have no idea what's going on. Like, we just can't figure
Seriously,
it out.
Seriously, they didn't.
Yeah, there was like there was like a long series of, oh, we'll try this. That didn't work. We'll try this. That
how
didn't work.
How frustrating that must have been.
Different doctors. And like, Sam taught me not only how to like feel more autonomous, but how to like stand up for myself at a doctor's office how to advocate for myself in that realm. And that was incredibly helpful. And she also like taught me that there's a lot of holistic ways to support your womb health. And in that, it led me to learning more about like fertility. And I like learned all about fertility awareness and started practicing fertility awareness and then like cycled awareness and read all the books and like just found a wealth of information that I wish I would have known when I was 16. Like it would have changed how I felt about my body from the very beginning.
What do you know now that you wish you knew then?
I wish that I knew the wisdom that there was in living in sync with my cycle.
Oh.
I wish that I would have been taught that to listen to it and to honor it and respect it and not dismiss it as like this thing that plagued me and every
or hide
woman.
It.
Mm-hmm, and hide it and be ashamed of it.
Oh, wow. How is your health now? Do you feel like you're in good sync with yourself? You're on a good place. You're in a
yes.
good place.
No, I had my last surgery October 5th of last year. So I've made it
okay.
one year surgery free. I'm feeling really good. And I've been doing a lot of intentional like healing, internally, you know, mentally,
yeah.
emotionally. After going through all of those surgeries, it was like a big death cycle. I ended a relationship and left the company that I worked for. We worked together.
Big transformation.
So I like changed my whole entire life through that experience.
2020 was a big year for you.
It was a big death cycle. But also like, I mean, sex and death, rebirth, like there's
yes.
there's a cycle. And I think that getting in touch with my own cycle has given me a trust in that new cycle, that everything that is happening right now is this like rebirthing and like new chapter, that even though, yeah, there was a lot of endings, like every ending is a new
beginning.
And like, that's something mm-hmm. really empowering. So really, really being embodied in that transition and being in honor, like honoring myself every mm-hmm. step of that way has been life changing. Like I know that it's changed the way that I live my life, and we'll walk all the hard seasons differently because of it.
If you were talking to a woman right now and who was suffering, having cysts, their doctors aren't sure, she's not comfortable advocating for herself, what tips and advice would you give her?
Oh my gosh. I would say that you deserve pleasure. Like, you deserve pleasure. It is your birthright as a woman to experience pleasure. And your body as a woman has an immense capability for pleasure. And that you need to get women on your side, that you need to find like women, you need to open up some space to have some support from women. So finding somebody like Sam or myself or somebody that you feel comfortable having some of those conversations with and learning how to be more of an advocate for yourself and mm-hmm. learning, even if it's just, you know, books that you can read and resources and different Instagram accounts to follow, like finding women that are going to support your health and that are going to not advise you to just take a pill, to just take this quick fix, but
yeah.
to really like address the problem at hand. And so supporting your whole self, supporting your whole, like your whole self as a person is going to be what ends up healing you. It's not one quick fix. It's really about like leaning in and listening to your whole self. So getting support from other women is super important. Learning how to advocate for yourself. It's a medical industry. It's an industry. You are a consumer. And so
true.
When you go, like Sam told me this and it helped me a lot. When you go to a doctor, you are a queen. You go into a doctor as a queen and everybody there works for you. And if you are not happy with the care that they provide, then you go find a doctor that is. And that's okay. It's not... There's a lot of perceived power and authority in a doctor just because
uh-huh.
they're a doctor.
And they make more money. I think women sometimes, and I think people who make under a certain amount of money look to doctors as authority figures who know everything. And I think that was a big thing that I had learned, that I could advocate for myself. I remember going to Planned Parenthood when I was younger and just feeling like... because I'm super young, but I would always leave feeling like they were talking down to me. Mm-hmm. And it was frustrating because they were providing education, which I still love Planned Parenthood. Don't get me wrong, but there's a few instances where I switched which Planned Parenthood I'd go to because I felt like they were talking down to me. I didn't feel comfortable being honest with them when they would ask questions about my sexual health. And I think a lot of doctors don't even ask you about sexual function. Like you just go to a regular checkup. They're not asking you if you feel like your sexual function is working properly for you. Like, where you are you happy with where it's at? And I think that's what I really loved about Planned Parenthood. And as I've gotten older, of course, no one's like talking down to me because I've been around. But I was so surprised when I would speak to other friends of mine who had so many misconceptions about women's sexual health and function. And when I say function, I just mean like you're happy with how everything's working down there and you're paying attention and you're listening and you're seeing what's coming out of it.
Yeah.
And I had a friend who thought that the Plan B pill was the abortion pill. And she was so shocked when I said the Plan B pill is not the abortion pill. It is not going to cause you to lose your baby if you have a fertilized egg. It's just going to stop the egg from becoming fertilized. If it's fertilized, it's fertilized. It is not the abortion pill. And she's very much against abortion, which I am on the other side of that. But I was like, you can take it. If you don't want a baby, you don't have to have one.
Well, there's one of the things that Sam has put together is called the Conscious Contraception Skillshare. And it's how she teaches about fertility awareness. And she also has a book on this kind of in conjunction with this called Please Bleed, Plants and Practical Magic in case you accidentally get sperm in your vagina.
Great.
It's a great book. And it's a lot about herbal allies, about how to not just, like, we get stuck in this, like, oh, no baby, no baby, no baby, no baby mentality. Yeah. And instead learning how to switch to a sacred yes and saying, like, I'm going to know where I'm at in my cycle, because women are not fertile every single day of their cycle.
Nope.
Women are only fertile for a short time. So being able to like look at your fertile markers and understand when you're fertile is kind of step one at really owning your power and your understanding of where you're at. But then also, if there is a whoops, if something happens, understanding different plants, like plant herbal allies that you can use to encourage menstruation. So it's not so much about, oh my gosh, I just don't want to have a baby. It's about, I want to bleed. Please bleed. Like that, I'm going to root myself in a sacred yes always. So if you're not, if you're in a time in your life where you don't want to have babies, you're not just not wanting to have babies. Maybe you're working on a career, you're birthing your thesis, you're, yes. you know, there's something else that you are creating and putting out into the world. And so instead
You're not instantly pregnant as soon as one drop of sperm like lands on your leg or inside you.
Up to 2 weeks. And so even if you did have a fertilized egg, for that egg to implant itself in the uterine wall and attach itself to the mother's blood supply network, is about 2 weeks. So even if you did have an oops, you have a window of time. Conception and implantation are two different steps, right, of that process. So you can have a conception, a fertilized egg that isn't implanted into the uterine wall, and you can affect that environment with plants or with abortion pills or with different substances to make that environment of the womb not hospitable for that fertilized egg. And you can encourage menstruation. You're encouraging the shedding of the lining, and that will shed a fertilized egg anyways. Yeah. But statistically, I mean, there's a lot of pregnancies don't actually end in a full term pregnancy. I mean, a lot
it's
of
so
times,
common, which good and bad, just depending.
Yeah. And it happens all the way from times where women don't even know that they're pregnant, and you have a conception, you have a fertilized egg that doesn't implant into the uterine wall and just flushes itself out or reabsorbs itself back into the body. That
interesting
happens. So you can have that happen and women don't even know they're pregnant, or you have miscarriage, or I mean there's different timelines. But I think that if you understand where you are in your cycle, it not only gives you like this incredible freedom of like autonomy. Mm-hmm. You're not dependent on anything for understanding your fertility. You're not dependent on pharmaceuticals. You're not dependent on a device. You're just dependent on you and your own knowledge of yourself. That's incredibly empowering.
There's so many apps out there to help you
with
that.
There's lots of support. Like there's mm-hmm. tons of ways to support yourself in that. But I think that it's also like, it unlocks this understanding of yourself that so many women are just blind to. And our culture is really blind to our culture.
Oh, yeah, we don't talk about it.
It doesn't even matter. Like, you know, we live morning, noon, and night, and anything that you can do, I can do bleeding, and, like, we're proud of it. But, like, should we have to? Should we have to do everything? Do we have to make everything hard? Do we always have to go as hard as we can?
I'm a firm believer in doing whatever I want to do whenever
yes,
I want to do
like, it. Yes, like, women are built with, like, an inner reset button, and so being able to honor that mm-hmm. and make space for that, I think is incredibly freeing. Like once women start to live in alignment with who they really are and how their bodies actually work, mm-hmm. other things start to change and improve. You feel better in all aspects.
Amazing. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that and opening up about that. I do have to ask you, what have you overheard at yoga?
Oh, I've overheard a lot of crying at yoga. I've done a lot of crying at yoga.
Oh.
but I think that it's because it's such a safe space to meet some of those harder feelings or even mm-hmm. just to meet some of the like ecstasy and joy and like gratitude. It's given a lot of presence to those for me. And it's always an honor. Like it's always an honor when I notice that someone wipes a tear away. I'm like, yes. I'm so glad that you're
because it's healing
experiencing that. It is. It's actual like healing in real time. So it's an honor to share that space both as a student and as a teacher.
Where can our friends find your classes?
I teach at Zen Riot on Mondays and Wednesdays. I teach a power yoga class and a feel good flow, which is kind of like a slow, more restorative yin yasa type blend of things.
Awesome.
Mondays and Wednesdays, Zen Riot.
Awesome. I'll have your stuff in the show notes.
Absolutely.
So people can find you. Thanks for coming on my little podcast. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
You bet. Bye, guys. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I want to hear from you. Please send me your overheard at yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga, but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste.